This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
And a very good afternoon. Welcome to Sports Talk 870. I'm your host, Earl Robinson. I'll be with you until 2 o'clock discussing sports with you. So just give us a call at 355-9527 or toll free 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Well, the NBA draft is tonight, and we're going to be watching and hoping to see Draymond Green's name called in the first round. And we're going to talk with MSU assistant coach Mike Garland about Draymond Green's draft status, and hopefully he'll go. We know he's been projected to go in the second half of the first round. Hopefully, I just want to find out, could he possibly go higher? Anyway, let's bring in Mike Garland to find that information out. Hey, Mike, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, how you doing, Earl?
Okay. Hey, any chance that Draymond could go in the top half of the first round? All we've been hearing is he's going to go between 20 and 30.
Well, Earl, I tell you, you never know with the draft. You know, you can hear those things. I was talking to Joe Dumars about a week ago, and he was talking about DeJuan Blair and how DeJuan could have went at number 16. The team was all the way set to take him up until about a half hour prior to the pick, and then in the last second decided not to take him, and he dropped all the way down from 16 to 52. So, you know, it's so unpredictable, and there's a lot of information or background information that we as, you know, casual standby observers, we just don't know.
Yeah, that's the thing. There's so much. He could draft. I mean, I've heard also that he could possibly go in the second round. Much about that as well, or you think he's certainly a first round draft pick?
Well, in my mind, of course, he's a first round draft pick. In my mind, he's a top 10. But Mike Garland, Tom Izzo of Michigan State, the Michigan State contingency, we're not making that choice. But I don't see him falling out of the first round.
And I hope he stays. I'm like you and everybody else, hoping that he'll stay in the first round. He certainly deserves that chance. I mean, he's worked so hard, but what, you know, when we look at the draft from the past years, you know, the past few years, we see a lot of the seniors don't get a lot of credit to the draft. It's like we've seen them all, and we've seen their weaknesses, their strength, and a lot of times they don't get serious enough consideration in the first round. A lot of them will get downgraded just because they're a senior.
Yeah, well, but I just don't see that happening to him with the type of year that he has. And, you know, there are a lot of teams that called our coaching staff and wanted to dig a little more into his background. If you look at him statistically, there was an article that Coach Dwayne Stevens was showing me. If you just went on production alone, he would be the second pick behind Anthony Davis. So, you know, he has some ingredients out there that I think are going to really keep him right there in the mix in the first round. I was looking earlier today, and I kind of thought maybe he would maybe go with Indiana at 26, but then I think the Celtics have the 21st and 22nd pick. I wouldn't be surprised to take if they took him there. And also seeing where Houston, a team that needs help from a player like him, they have like the 11th pick, I believe, and I wouldn't be surprised to see him go there. So there's a variety of spots within that first round. Earl, all it takes is for a team to like you, and that's the bottom line.
Oh, So true. I mean, I've read so many of these mock drafts where I've seen him going to Miami, going to Oklahoma, going to Indiana, and I think I've seen enough mock drafts, so they've got him all over. Most of them have him going somewhere between 20 and 30, which as long as you go in the first round, I guess that's the bottom line. That's good. And we know that Draymond's character, he's excellent character-wise. I mean, he's above reproach about that, and that's a plus, because there's so many players today that have some kind of a flaw in their character or something that they've done. But Draymond has done everything the right way.
Well, you're right. And that also, you know, as you just said, all those intangibles really help his draft status tremendously. He's going to be a great A to any team in terms of, you know, team camaraderie, and a guy that can really help you in the locker rooms and on the airplanes and in the buses. So, you know, every team nowadays, they're looking for that high character good guy, and he really brings that piece to the table.
And of course, he can do so many different things on the court. I mean, he's not just a one-dimensional player who just passes or just rebounds or just can shoot, but he does everything well. How much does that play, or how much is that going to help him? Because we've seen that players that do everything well, you know, they don't get drafted as high. Usually you have to do one, you know, you have to really excel at one thing and then just do some of the other things right. But when you can do a lot of things good, sometimes that doesn't play well at the pro game, does it?
Well, I mean, you can say that, but he has one thing that he really does very, very well, and that's rebound. I mean, he averaged 10 rebounds a game, and there's I bet you there's not even you know, there weren't 10 guys in the country that averaged 10 rebounds a game. So, you know, he does have that one staple. You know, if he's on the floor with equivalent minutes, he's going to get you some rebounds. That's one thing he can do. But to go along with that, he has the passing ability. He has the ability to shoot with some range. He can go down and play inside, and he can defend. So, you know, he's one of those guys that brings some other things to the table as well.
Yes. You know, we've heard that Jared Sullinger, you know, he's dropping real fast. He may be down there in the lower half of that first round as well. He might have some back injuries and things like that. When you read about, I mean, the Big Ten just doesn't have a lot of guys going in the draft this year. Those two might be the only two guys that get drafted in that first round. And I don't know if they'll have anybody going in the second round, but it certainly seems like the Big Ten has not done as well in these past few years.
Yeah, well, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see Robbie Hummel nor Jordan Taylor go early in the second round, and I wouldn't be surprised to see Shurner go in the second round as well. I mean, those kids are also good players, and they too bring a lot to the table, you know. You know, a lot of times, you know, the draft can be misleading. There's tons of guys that become great pros that weren't even drafted. So, you know, it's all about what you do once you get there.
Oh, so true, Mike. That's for sure. I mean, we've seen that over the years. A lot of guys you've never heard of come out of nowhere and have a good career and play well. And that's the thing with the NBA. It seems like a lot of the teams are just looking for guys who not just have a good skill set, but they want guys who are very athletic as well. Do you see that league just changing and really looking for everyone to be a very athletic person or player?
Well, athleticism is very important in that league, and there's no question about it. But, You know, guys that can play, they just find their way to the court. And you're starting to see it more and more and more and more and more. And, yes, athleticism is great to have, but a guy still has to understand the game and be able to play the game the right way in order to get on the floor. That gives a guy like a Draymond Green a great chance to have a lot of success. And you got to remember, you know, he wasn't playing against top liver. He was playing against some of those same athletes that they're going to draft when he acquired the numbers that he got this year.
Oh, yes, he had an outstanding year, as we've seen, Mike. And I think he's just going to be a very good pro wherever he goes. Hopefully, he'll get to a team where, you know, if he goes high in the first round, then that means he'll be on a team that's not that well. But if he does go in the lower half and goes to a good team, he may not get that much playing time. It'll be a chance for him to just blend in and even learn the NBA game even more so.
I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. And a lot of times, your longevity in the league has a lot more to do with the team that you're playing for than it does your abilities to play. And I'm just hoping and praying that he gets with the right team.
Yeah. Hey, Mike, let's look at this year's team. You've got a tremendous class coming in. It looks like how do you see those guys all fitting in? I know they've already got the campus. So how do you look at the new class coming in?
Well, Earl, you know, we have a variety of players in there, and all of those guys have their own personal niches. And you know, it's going to be interesting. It's hard to speak on what they're doing, what they're going to do when the lights come on in November. But you know, we got a quality group of kids, and you know, we're looking forward to getting them on the floor and coaching them.
Yes, one of the things I've noticed when you look for your team or any other team, sometimes it's difficult for kids, depending on where they came and what they did in high school, to fit in with a new group of players. Do you have much of that? Do you see? I know you haven't had a lot of that, but in the past there have been times where kids just didn't work well with the players that were already there. So do you see that possibly being a problem for Michigan State, or do you think that most guys will just fit in quite well with the players that are already here?
Well, I think that I think that with the qualities that they have and the things that they do, they're going to be great assets to our program. You know, I don't foresee any problems in terms of them mixing in with the guys that we got here already. But you know, here at Michigan State, we've always done a great job of evaluating and not just going on talent alone, but bringing in guys that blend into our style of play. And all of those guys should be able to do that.
Yes, because that's, I know a lot of fans over here will say, well, where did they get that guy? Where did they get that player? And a lot of it has to do with, you know, you get players who can fit in and can work well with the players that you have, but they've got a certain skill set that you use. Is that maybe the number one factor? You want guys who can fit in and play well and has a good skill set as well? Or is it hard to find guys to do all those things?
No, it's just our style of play, and you know, we like to recruit kids early, and we do a pretty thorough evaluation of them at an early age, and then we you know, we watch them for the first couple of years in their recruitment. And then at that point, we make a decision early on if that's the kid we're going to go after or not. You'll never see us recruit 100 kids. We don't do that. We earmark the ones we think have the skills and the abilities and the intangibles off the court as well to fit into our program, and those are the kids we go after.
Okay. Hey, Mike, I want to thank you for being with us today. You know, I know you and I and everybody else will be looking at the draft tonight to see where Draymond Green is headed. So best of luck to him, and hey, good luck to you, because you've got a very good class coming in. So we want to wish you the best of luck and summer workouts and helping these guys integrate well with the players that are already here. Hey, thanks a lot, Mike.
All right. You're welcome, Earl.
Okay.
Take bye-bye. Care.
Bye. And that's Mike Garland, the assistant coach here at Michigan State University. The time, 20 minutes after the hour, 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR.
More than 2 years after President Obama signed his health care law, the Supreme Court weighs in with a ruling that could reshape the health care industry, change the way you get and pay for medical care, and shake up the presidential campaign. I'm Neil Conan. The final ruling on the health care law and what it means for you. Join us next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
A hot day with a high of 95 degrees, mostly sunny with a chance of rain and thunderstorms. A chance of showers and thunderstorms tonight, the low in the low 70s. Mostly sunny and a high of 92 tomorrow. Mostly sunny Saturday with a chance of rain and thunderstorms and a high in the low 90s. I'm Scott Pohl.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527, or toll free, 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. And now we're going to bring in Barry Tompkins with us. And Barry is a fine commentator. He does a Showbox, The New Generation. And he's got an outstanding fight card coming up Saturday night. And we're going to talk with Barry. Barry, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing good, Earl. How about yourself?
Hey, doing good. And, boy, this is a very good fight card you got coming up Saturday night. Cornelius Brundage against Corey Spinks. Gary Russell Jr. against Christopher Perez. And Estrelande Lara against Freddie Hernandez, who was upset in his last fight. But this seems to be, it's going to be a very good fight card.
Yeah, you know, it's very competitive. That's the one thing I really like about it. It's one of those cards where you can, you know, take a look at all three of these fights, and honestly, you could see any one of them going, you know, not the way they're expected to go. You know, I think Arislandi Lara will get a test from Freddie Hernandez. You know, he's a really experienced guy. And I think the Spinks-Bundridge fight is just wide open. That's, you know, that's a grab bag. Bundridge knocked him out in the fifth round the last time they fought. But I think that could go either way. And, that, you know, that's what makes it interesting, and that's what makes for good television.
Oh, yes. This should be a very good one. I've seen Brundage fight here in Michigan, of course, several times before. I'm a judge here, and I think I've even judged a few of his fights. He's a very tough fighter. Sometimes, you know, his skill set won't allow him to show everything he has or that he does, and so sometimes he gets in trouble. But basically, he's a pretty good fighter, and I think he's going to give Corey Spinks another battle again.
Yeah, you know, I do too. And I think the other factor in this fight is, you know, the clock is ticking on both these guys. Mm-hmm. You know, Bundridge, I think, is just about to be 39 years old, you know, so he's been around the track a little bit, you know, and always have to ask yourself with both of them, you know, what's left. And I think really that may be the bottom line of this fight.
Yes, and I've seen Gary Russell Jr. a few times. He has a ton of potential. I mean, this is a young guy who's, you know, he's got everything going for him right now.
Yeah, big upside to him, I think. You know, but he's in with a guy, and I haven't talked to him yet. We meet with the fighters tomorrow, so I'm interested in what he has to say about his opponent, whether or not he's seen him, because he's not fought in the United States before, and he's got a very good record, but we don't know who he's been fighting. You know, I kind of think it's probably a pretty big step up for him to try on Russell, but guys like that could be dangerous. You know, first of all, Mexican fighters just, you know, they're just tough guys. As a breed of cat, they're just tough guys. So you know the guy's going to, at the very least, you know, come there with the idea of beating him. So I think it'll be a good test for him. And I think it's, you know, it could be a minefield for him because you just really don't know what this guy's got.
Yes. Now, what did you think about that last fight with Lara? I mean, it was considered an upset. I mean, I saw the fight, too. I thought he had won it, but I know it. When you're fighting a big name guy, a lot of times the decision might go against you, but it went against you. But what did you think about that last fight Lara had?
Lara's really been fighting in hard luck, you know. His last fight was actually a good one, but the two before that, you know, they're both split decisions, as I recall. I don't have the record in front of me, but I think they're both split decisions. Or one was a split draw, right? Majority
yes.
draw. And one was a split decision loss. And, I, you know, from people, I didn't see either of the fights, but from what people tell me, you know, he won at least one of those fights. And his last fight, he was really impressive. He got the guy out of there almost immediately. I like him a lot. I think, you know, we talk about upside. There have been a lot of the, you know, Cuban expats who have not,
you know, lived up to what their amateur status was. But I think this new breed, you know, Yuriorkis Gamboa and Rigondo and those guys, and Lara amongst them, are a whole, they're different guys, you know. And I think they've come here and not so much fallen into the good life here in the United States, but they have. Again, I'll use that word upside, a real upside, just in terms of their potential as professionals. I think the second generation of Cuban fighters is kind of learned from the mistakes of the first. And guys like Lara, I see him getting better and better and better. I think he's definitely a factor in, you know, at 154 pounds, which I think is a really good and very competitive weight division right now.
And we're talking with Barry Tompkins, who's a Showtime analyst, and he's on the New Generation, and that's coming up on Saturday night. Should be a good fight card coming on at 9 o'clock. That's Showtime, the New Generation Showbox. So you can check that out on Saturday night on Showtime. Hey, I got to ask you about last week's. What did you think of that Victor Ortiz? That was considered a very big upset, but he got his jaw broken by Joselito, who was a, you know, you're always leery. Sometimes you've seen when you have these fighters who come in at its last minute substitution, they've got everything going for them because, you know, the fighter who's been training for one fighter all along, you know, doesn't know anything about the guy coming in. And most people just sort of think he's going to win it. But a lot of times it doesn't happen that way because that fighter doesn't know anything about the guy who's fighting in. And that sure certainly helped Joselito, Lopez last week.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it did. It's interesting, you know, I tell you, we meet with the fighters the day before the fight. And when we talked to Joselito Lopez last week before the fight, I mean, you knew this guy went into he was going into that fight with the idea that he was going to win the fight. You know, the big question about him was, does he have any kind of a beard? He'd never really been hit. And he did. He is the kind of fighter, at least he was, and he continued to be, the kind of guy who gets hit a lot. But and he was 140 pounds coming up to 147. So, you know, I think that's probably why, if in fact Ortiz took him lightly, and I'm not sure he did, but if in fact he took him lightly, I think that's probably why, because literally and figuratively, he was lighter, you know? Mm-hmm. So, you know, he came in, at fight time, he probably was maybe 146 by the time they fought. And I'd say Ortiz, you know, they gained 5, 6, 7, 8 pounds, you know, after the weigh-in. I'd say Ortiz was probably 153, 154. So there was an appreciable difference between those two. And Lara just, you know, he went in there with an idea of how he was going to win the fight, and he won it. He took Ortiz's best in the process. So that was no fluke, you know. And now, of course, Ortiz is going to be questioned for why, and we questioned him about it, too, of why he took that fight in the first place, you know. And he said he took it because he'd been actually in two camps because he was preparing for Berto, and then Berto had the arm injury, and then later Berto, you know, tested positive. So he actually had gone through two camps, and he just said, look, I've been in camp for this long. I may as well take a fight, you know. And that's why he took that fight in the first place, because Showtime had promised him a date with Canelo Alvarez on September 15th. So he lost a ton of money by losing that fight to Joselito Lopez.
Yes, he did. That had to be unfortunate for him, but that's part of the fight game. I mean, when you schedule ahead like that, you really better take care of business today. I mean, that's one thing that it shows, doesn't it, Barry? If you don't take care of business, you can certainly be hurt in the long run.
Absolutely. And you've been around the game for a long time, as have I. And you see it happen time and time and time again. And you would think these guys would, you know, kind of wake up and smell the coffee, wouldn't you?
Mm-hmm. You would. I mean, you got to take everybody. If you're going to take a fight and you got a big fight in the offside, you better take the guy you're fighting very seriously and you know, fight it like it's a championship fight, dude. But a lot of times the guys are going and just try to coast and just try to get through it and eke out a win somehow.
Yeah, you know, and I think in this case, you know, I don't think Ortiz took him lightly. I really don't. You know, I think kind of what happened is, you know, Ortiz hit him with as good a shot
yes,
as
he did.
He has. And the guy's still standing there, you know. And I'm sure right at that point, Ortiz probably said, oh, you know, this could be a long night, you know. And I think that was really the bottom line of the fight. You know, we didn't know anything about what kind of a beard Lopez had. And it turns out he's got a pretty good one.
Yes, yes, he does. I mean, he certainly fought a good fight, and it'll be interesting to see what he goes or what the rest of his career has in hold for him, and see how does Ortiz come back from that. Because Ortiz had a pretty good reputation before he fought that fight, and especially after the way he lost to Floyd Mayweather. I think a lot of us were just giving him maybe the benefit of the doubt, like he's probably better than what he was when he fought Mayweather. And I think most people gave him a benefit of the doubt, but boy, he surprised everyone with that outing in there. And did you think anything on why he didn't start faster? Because he did seem he got out the gate pretty slow. I think if he could have started out faster, it would have been a little bit different outcome, possibly.
Yeah, I think you're probably right about that. You know, although he's never, at least to my recollection, he's never been a particularly quick starter. You know, and I think one of the things, when I first started doing his fights, he wasn't a banger. You know, he was more of a boxer than he was a puncher. And all of a sudden, he started whacking guys. And I think he kind of, you know, got into that mode of I'm a banger rather than a boxer. You know, he got away from kind of what brought him there in the first place, you know, and he's a smart kid, you know, and he knows, you know, bangers sell tickets, you know, and that gets him on national television. And so he kind of, you know, I'm really not sure that still that even though he's got some pop, I'm still not sure that that's a natural thing for him. You know, I think he might be well advised to go back to being, even though I've always thought this is, you know, a complete non sequitur, but a boxer puncher. I think he might be better served to be that. Yeah.
Well, Barry, what do you think is going to happen with Floyd Mayweather when he gets out of the jail? And then what do you think also what's going to happen with Manny Pacquiao with his loss? How do you see those guys moving on in the future?
I don't know. You know, I suppose if I had that answer, I'd have solved the meaning of life. You know, I don't know. I think it's a shame. I think that fight already should have been made and already should have happened. And you know, we probably would have been on the second or third version of that fight by this time. Because there was a time that would have really been an attractive fight and probably the biggest fight in history. But now, you know, they're both getting older, you know. And you know, Mayweather took some shots in the fight with Cotto, you know. And Pacquiao, you know, really hasn't looked like the old Manny Pacquiao in his last couple of fights, you know. So I do think, I really believe with all my heart, that fight will eventually get made. But it's a shame that it wasn't already made, because I think we're going to see both these guys, I don't want to say on the downside, but they've already reached, you know, maybe downside is the best way to describe it. You know, I'm not trying to tell you that they're all done, but the best is behind them both, I think, at this point. You know, I think probably if I had to judge, I would say that Mayweather probably has a little bit more left than Pacquiao. But it's still a fight that I think the boxing public deserves to see.
Oh, yes, I agree with you. I think they are both, I think, like you say, they're on the downside of their career. You know, they're getting older, and it's a fight that should have been fought about 2 or 3 years ago. That's something in boxing that I don't know if we can ever – I know we can't legislate it or anything like that, but a lot of times the best fighters of the generation won't fight. And I think that's unfortunate, but that happens a lot in the sport of boxing, and I think that's one reason why it's less lost so much with the public in general, because we don't get a chance to see the best fighters at their peak fighting each other.
Yeah, I think so, too, because the fights wind up not being made in the ring. They wind up being made in a front office someplace, you know, and it winds up being kind of a pissing contest, quite honestly, you know, between promoters and, you know, Top Rank and Golden Boy are the two, you know, kings of the jungle right now. And Mayweather is his own guy, you know, and so Mayweather's the guy that holds all the cards, you know, because he makes his own deals. He's not really promoted by Golden Boy. He just pays Golden Boy a fee to promote his fights. But he's a very savvy guy, and he's, you know, he one of the more interesting people, quite honestly, and I'm going a little bit off topic here, but he's one of the more interesting people I've ever been around in my life, because he's dumb as a fox. I'll tell you, he's a very bright guy when it comes to deal making. You know, he knows what he's doing, and he's not a bad guy when you're one-on-one with him. He's really not a bad guy. When he gets around his boys, you know, then the performance starts, you know. But he's a very savvy guy, a lot more savvy than people give him credit for. And I think, you know, the only reason that fight hasn't been made on his account, you know, is that he wants to be in control of it, because he does his own things. And he's told me, and he's told everybody for that matter, you know, that why should I fight Manny Pacquiao? I can fight a couple of tomato cans and make the same money I would make if the promoters made the fight between Pacquiao and me. You know, so I think he's a savvy guy. The only thing, the sad thing is that, as we mentioned earlier, the boxing public are the people that get screwed in the deal.
Yes. Do you think that the promoters, especially the ones that have to deal, they don't want to deal with Mayweather? And maybe part of fear that maybe other boxers will start doing like he does and trying to take a career, you know, take more of their own career and take their own career in their hands, as opposed to just going straight with, like Pacquiao's been doing, fighting for the promoter. Do you see maybe some of the promoters like Arum are just afraid to be and hesitant to have a guy like Mayweather, who used to be under Arum, but from doing business with him?
Yeah, absolutely. I absolutely think that, you know, and I'm quite sure. I don't know this for a fact, but I would say Manny Pacquiao's kind of looking at Mayweather and saying, wow, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, he made $55 million in that last fight. He personally, and to the best of my knowledge, that was before the pay-per-view count, you know. So Mayweather sets the ticket prices. He sets the pay-per-view prices. He sells the international fights. You know, I mean, he owns his own property, you know. And I'm certain that Manny Pacquiao, and I think this is the last year of Manny Pacquiao's deal with Top Rank, he'd be a fool if he wasn't looking at Mayweather and saying, wow, you know, if this guy can do it, yeah, I ought to be able to do this too, you know. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know. Is Manny Pacquiao as savvy as Floyd Mayweather? That's the question.
Yes, and plus that he's getting up. I mean, Manny's what, 36 now, so he's getting up there, and so many fights as we've seen in the past just don't get made, or they get made when people don't care about. I mean, I remember when Roy Jones Jr. and Hopkins finally fought the second time. I mean, I know for years, especially after that first fight, a lot of us were certainly looking for that second fight to come in the next 3 to 4 years. But then it just lingered on and on and on. And when they finally made it, no one cared.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I couldn't agree more with you. And Roy Jones is a classic example,
yes,
of exactly what we're talking about. You know, I don't believe he will ever get his just due for how good he was, because he never fought the defining fight. You know, that old saying of great fights make great fighters, you know, and Roy Jones never had the great fight, you know, and I think he needed to fight the German. I can't remember his name.
Yes,
Nasta, was it? But,
yes,
you know, I think that's the guy he needed to fight to unify the light heavyweight title, and he never fought him. And there was no reason, he probably could have beat him, but he just never fought him, you know, and I don't think he'll ever get his just due. Much as I... You know, Marvin Hagler was a guy, for a different reason. I think Marvin Hagler was one of the great middleweights of all time. I really do. You know, but he'll never get his just due, but for different reasons than Roy Jones. You know, people will only remember the fight with Sugar Ray Leonard. They won't remember that he fought everybody in that division and was a champion for, what, 8-9 years, something
yes.
like that. You know, and it's sad, you know, guys like that, guys like Marvin, you know, who I think the world of, you know, and Roy Jones will never get that kind of, for different reasons, but they'll never get their just due as to being the great fighters that they were.
Yes. Well, there's one right now who might get his just due. He's the current middleweight champion, Sergio Martinez. He's trying to make fights with the best fighters in the round. That's refreshing to me, I think, to you and other people as well, because he's one of the few out there that doesn't mind, who wants to fight the best.
Yeah, I agree with you, you know, and I think he will. In the end, I think he will get his just due. He's, you know, again, he's a guy who puts bodies in seats because he's a very exciting fighter, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think the problem for him that he has to deal with is the opposite problem of Roy Jones, you know, is that nobody wants to fight him, you know.
Yes.
I mean, he's too good, you know.
Yes.
And that's, you know, that's a minefield, you know. It's really a shame, you know. You know, Robert Guerrero was talking about it. And, you know, that's fight I think would be an attractive fight. But I think Guerrero, if he wins this next fight, that's going to be right down the road here in San Jose at the end of July. If he wins that fight, they're talking about making he and Mayweather. You know,
mm-hmm.
So once again, you know, Martinez, who I think is terrific. I think eventually, though, you know, if you want to win a title, you got to go through him. You know, and I think ultimately that's going to happen.
Yes. Hey, Barry, I want to thank you for joining me. Always a pleasure talking with you. And you got a great card coming up Saturday night on Showbox, The New Generation, live at 9 o'clock. Cornelius Brundage against Corey Spinks. Gary Russell Jr. against Christopher Perez. And Eris Islandia Lara against Freddie Hernandez. So it should be a very good card. And I know I'm going to be watching it on Saturday night. You've got an outstanding card there, my friend.
Well, thanks, Rose. Always a pleasure to talk with you.
Okay, thank you, and we'll talk to you a little bit later on, buddy.
I hope so. Thanks.
Okay, bye-bye. And that's Barry Tompkins calling the fight Saturday night on Showbox, The New Generation, with Steve Farhood. They've got a great card, an outstanding card. We've told you about Cornelius Brundage, Corey Spinks, Gary Russell versus Christopher Perez, Arislandia Lara against Freddie Hernandez. So three very good fights coming up on Saturday night, beginning at 9 o'clock on Showtime. The time is 41 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR.
The secret to being happier and more productive at work? Get a social life. Recent studies show that workers do their jobs better when they socialize more in between tasks. I'm Neil Conan, making work work. Plus, musician and photographer Moby joins us from the Aspen Ideas Festival. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 3 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
This is Scott Pohl. Good afternoon. Mostly sunny today with a chance of rain and thunderstorms and a high in the mid-90s. A chance of showers and thunderstorms with a low of 72 tonight. Friday, the high 92, mostly sunny tomorrow. Saturday, mostly sunny with a chance of rain and thunderstorms and a high of 91.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527, or toll-free, 877-9527-870. Our email address, sportstalk@wkar.org. Well, Aaron, we've got a little bit of time left, but that's one thing. When you look at these potential fights and things going on in the world of sports, sometimes, me being a boxing fan, I'm certainly don't like that we don't get a chance to see the best fighters fight against each other. I mean, it's one of those things that, just the way the sport is run, it's run so poorly overall because there's no one to take the lead and no one that can make the matches and everyone and all the fighters, they're looking for, a lot of them are looking just for big paydays and, they don't want to fight the best that's available.
Yeah, I don't follow as much boxing as you do, but so I guess what you're saying here is obviously with Barry, he's got a good fight card, you say, but are you saying basically that these fights aren't the best possible?
Well, these are pretty good coming up, but we see so many fighters that are so good, and then they just won't fight someone that they're ready for or that's ready to fight them. And that's unfortunate that the fighters don't want to fight the best fighters of the day. They will, they'll fight someone who's not ready, that isn't ready, and that will happen all the time. It's unfortunate. But that's the way it goes. Hey, I want to thank you all for listening and thank you for calling in. We're going to continue to talk sports with us right here. We've got a big all-star game coming up in high school football. And that's one thing about the team sports. You can't avoid anybody. I mean, unless the coaches decide to just avoid a team like that. For the most part, you've got to play against another very good team. Unfortunately, in the sport like boxing, you can avoid fighting the best fighters if you want to. That's what Roy Jones did for so long. He just fought a lot of tomato cans. And if you want to do that, you can, but you won't get the accolades and you won't get the respect that you probably deserve if you just fight a bunch of chumps all along. And a lot of fighters do that, unfortunately.
Okay. Well, I guess, I guess I didn't realize it. How do they become, world champions? I mean, they got to fight the best eventually, right?
Sooner or later, you've got to fight someone of your own caliber, and that's the key. A lot of times, you might go 20, 25 fights, and you might get 25 wins of fighting 25 chumps, and to build your record up. And then when you fight somebody who's just as good as you are, that could be a problem.
I could see that being a problem. So So if that's the issue, I mean, do you think there's going to be solutions sometime for this?
I don't know. It's been going on for so long because fighters, they want to get a good payday. And so that's the thing. Everybody wants to get a good payday. And so many people aren't willing to risk their reputation to get that good payday. If you do, you can get highly paid. You can make a lot of money if you are willing to fight the best. But you're going to have to win some of those fights. That's the key. So you got to take a chance on winning and losing, if you want. But if you get in a ring against one of the best who's recognized as the best in your weight class, you've got to fight someone, hopefully, or at least a few that will be considered a very tough test. And so sooner or later, you're going to fight somebody tough. We don't know when, but sooner or later, you will have to have a tough fight.
Yeah, and I guess that's true. And I guess to go back to your point, they want a payday. I mean, is it just because too much money is involved now with boxing? I don't know how it was back in the day. But is money even more relevant?
If you get good, you can get the really big payday. So on some fights, the lower level fights, no, it's not that great. But if you get good, you can command a pretty good pace there, scale. Mayweather, he's the best right now at his weight class. So he commands millions of dollars for every time he gets in the ring. But a lot of fighters can't do that. So if you're just a good fighter and you don't have a reputation per se, then you're not going to get the big money. But if you got a good reputation and you're willing to take some chances, you can make a pretty good living in boxing once you get to a certain level. Hey, give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870. We got the draft coming up tonight. You going to be in front of the TV watching the draft tonight, Aaron?
If they can show it online, I don't have cable. I think it's on ESPN, I would assume. Yeah. But they probably will stream it online, so I might be able to catch a little bit of it there. And do you know what time it starts?
7 o'clock.
7 o'clock, okay. Eastern time, I'm assuming,
yep.
Because it's in New York. But, I'm looking forward to kind of – I mean, really, frankly, Draymond Green is really the only one I think, for the few first picks, I think it's pretty obvious, Davis and all that good stuff. So, those ones you're going to kind of expect to happen. But it's going to be, once you get past the first few teams, it's going to be,
see
what they choose. And then later, obviously in the first round, the coach was saying earlier, you just never know. I mean, so we could be sitting here predicting Draymond Green going, later in the first round, between 20 and 30, but he could go before. But, it's even possible that for some odd reason, never know what a team sees in someone.
Exactly.
He could end up in the second round, too. So you never know. But yeah. I'll definitely be watching it, though.
Yeah, I must admit, I'm surprised how, I've been reading so much about Jared Sullinger and how he's going to fall, and he's falling out of the first half of the first round. So whoever, if he's healthy, he should be a very good player for whoever drafts him.
Yeah, if he's healthy, but a lot of people have over the years have not passed on players because of medical injuries or whatever the case is. But yeah, he's a great player that has a lot of potential. I mean, obviously he has some things to work on, but he's very athletic. He can shoot it. I mean, he can post up. He can do various things. He's tall. I mean, so he's bound for the NBA. But if a team thinks that this injury is, I believe it's his back or some form of it.
Yes.
If they feel that isn't going to be able to sustain himself in the NBA for a while, he's going to keep going down. But, someone's going to pick him up and they're going to take a chance on him because they're going to see him. Hey, we're going to take a chance, with modern medicine nowadays, you never know what, that could fix. Maybe he could have some surgery. I know it's a back. And so sometimes when you have surgery on a back, things are always going to be different the rest of your life. But, someone's going to take a chance on him. I still think he goes in the first round. I think a team is just going to say, well, we're going to take a risk. We need him. He could be a good fit. And if they take the risk and it pays off, well, that was a great choice by them. So, but then it could go the other way. So who knows?
Yes, you're right on that. That's for sure. I mean, I think that someone will take a chance on him. They'll look at his upside. Yes, they may know he may have back problems. Their doctor may have checked him out, but they feel that he might be worth taking a shot at. And so if someone takes a shot at Jared Sullinger, and I think if it does turn out okay, or that he works his way out of it or gets some more surgery, I think eventually he could be a very, very good player. But we may have to wait and see. So that's another reason to watch the draft tonight, just to see where he'll go. And like I was asking Mike, the Big Ten just hasn't done that well these past few years, have they?
Yeah, they haven't. And, you know, I think that's just how sports works sometimes. You know, that you'll go through a phase where, wow, this team is really good, or they have this many players. You know, it's just not for basketball either. I mean, this goes for various sports. Football is a good example as well. So, you know, who knows what the reason is, specific reason is, but then, you know, maybe in a couple of years there's a handful of Big Ten players that are really good. I mean, Michigan State has a handful of players coming in this year, current players that I think are that I do believe that have potential to make it to the NBA. You know, Michigan has slowly been increasing their crop of recruits, so there might be some players there going to the NBA. So, you know, you never know, but just because they go to the NBA doesn't mean that they're going to turn out to be great players. But nonetheless, you're right. Big Ten hasn't done so hot as far as getting a lot of players in the draft. But if you think about it, compared to other sports, unlike football, you know, the NBA is, what, only two rounds. I mean, football is, what, seven?
Seven.
Mm-hmm. So your odds of getting into the NBA are much slimmer, and you're potentially dealing with international players as well. So.
Yes.
You know, I think that's one thing to think about, too, is sure the Big Ten hasn't maybe produced that many draftees per se, but the reality is there's only a handful of players that actually get to the draft. So, I mean, there's a lot of players that go undrafted that, you know, might get a contract in the D League or, you know, whatever the case is. But so the fact that there's a lot of players not getting drafted from the Big Ten, you know, it's not a surprise, but it's not, you know, to diminish the Big Ten by any means.
Yes, I'm just looking at the list of international players. This is a year that it looks like there are not going to be that many international players drafted. I mean, they've only 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 have applied for the draft status. So only 7 international players. So that means we'll see a lot more American players in the draft, and a lot more, and that will help and a lot more college players getting in this year.
Yeah, that's good to see. I mean, you know, as we discussed the other day, MSU will be opening up in Germany, or, you know, I'm not sure if they're opening up in Germany or they're playing
first
game up in Germany. But, you know, if there's only 7 players or so, you know, coming internationally, I mean, that I think, you know, sure, the NBA, you know, wants to kind of grow the sport more internationally. But the reality is, it's just not going to catch on as I think that as much as they're hoping it will. Mm-hmm. And when you only have 7 players coming from, you know, the international leagues to the NBA draft, I mean, what does that tell you about the, you know, the sport internationally? There's 7 guys. I mean, there's more than 7 players internationally. And so if only 7 players felt it was good enough to enter the NBA draft, I mean, I think that tells you something right there about, you know, maybe the NBA doesn't really need to focus on, you know, going international.
Yeah, but as we know, the money talks, so they'll continue to draft the NBA, the players from overseas. And the thing is, so many of them have had success in the NBA. They used to didn't think that way, but so many players have done well, so they'll probably continue doing that in drafting the players from the overseas. And you know, it's been a surprise that how well they've done. I know a lot of players, the game has changed so much. That's the thing. You know, big men used to, I remember when, you know, when Larry Brown was coaching the Pistons, and he had a strong disdain for international players because international players wouldn't play down low, close to the basket. A lot of them like to shoot outside and shoot a three-pointer, and the game has turned that way. You see a lot of big men now shooting outside and shooting jump shots. A lot of them just aren't low, close players anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I maybe you can tell me how many post players do we even have in the NBA anymore?
Just 2 or 3.
Exactly.
That's about it.
I mean, I it wasn't even that long ago either. I mean, you're talking probably, what, you know, 10, 15 years ago?
Yep.
That, you know, that was the norm. Hey, you'd put it up top, you'd let him post up, pass it down to him, and he'd make his move, and Shaq would dunk it. I mean, you know, yeah, you don't see that anymore. It's completely changed. So you're right. These big guys, they're not as, you know, I guess when I say big, they're not as bulky. They're,
right,
they're more taller. They're more athletic. They're,
yep,
more fit, I suppose.
And they handle the ball a lot,
right,
better.
A lot better. But, You know, if that's the way it's going to change, I guess that's how players are going to view it that way. But, you know, unfortunately, that I think in reality, one thing people don't see is that actually hurts, you know, high school players and college players, players that, oh, hey, I could work down in the post. Well, the reality is that's not how the game is run anymore if you have it, think you have a shot. And, you know, in college you see it a little bit more, but, you know, it just depends. But if you think you're a post player now in high school or something that has a legitimate shot in the NBA as a post player, well, you're in for a rude awakening, and you might want to, you know, take off some pounds or something like that. But you're right, the game has changed, and, you know, the international players, I agree, none of them are really post players. They're a lot like Dirk, I guess, would be a great example.
Yes, yes, it would, because Dirk Nowitzki is a very good player, and, you know, he's 6'10", and he can shoot a three-point shot with range and good consistency. And a lot of players are like that now, because, you know, you're not going to have your post, inside post players going out to check a 7-footer or 6'10" or 6'11" or 7-footer at the 3-point line, and so consequently, if you're a good shooter, you can make you can become a very good 3-point shooter just because of that.
Yeah, and maybe that's part of the reason that, you know, we've had people on the show that have stated that they can't watch the NBA.
Yeah.
I mean, we've stated ourselves that it's difficult to watch even during the regular season
because.
You know, the energy just doesn't seem to be there when it comes, you know, compared to the playoffs. And, you know, who knows? People have always argued, too, that, you know, the day they introduced the three-point line, that was the death of the NBA. So, you know, the game has changed, but, you know, it still lives on. You know, just like anything else in life, things change and we have to adapt, and we do adapt.
Yeah we do.
And it's still as popular as ever, so, you know, I guess... yes, for the NBA, that's all that counts, is that they're getting their money and that it's popular.
Yep. Hey, Aaron, you know, we had Mike Ingram on yesterday, and Mike sent me an email on the players that he got from the Lansing area that'll be playing at the LCC next year. He says some of the recruits he got from the area are Jeff Kane from Sexton, Devlin Bell and Luke Gunther from Bath, Nico Rios from Bath, and Zach Thomas from Clare, and Tyrene Wade of Sexton is transferring back to LCC. Wade and Thomas Gunther and Rios are all 66 and 60, 6 foot six, 6 foot seven. So they give us a great height. And he said, I'm waiting to hear from two bigs from the area. So he will update me later on. But looks like Mike Ingram is going to have a pretty good squad, pretty good team this year.
Yeah, it looks like it. I mean, that's great to see that you got, you know, I mean, obviously we know Lansing Community College is a community college, but, you know, and those schools usually, you know, they usually get the recruits, you know, in-state. It's not too often you get out-of-state ones, but, yeah, I mean, those sound like, you know, those guys are good. I mean, you know, Sexton, I mean, we're all aware how good of a team that is, and, you know, obviously one player coming to state here, so, you know, that's good to see that, you know, he's got some good players coming in.
Yes, that's for sure. Well, you know, Sexton put out some very good players. I mean, the one, Denzel Valentine coming to state, the player Forbes going to Iowa. I mean, they had some big-time players play at the upper-level Division I schools. So Sexton did a very good job of producing players to play big-time college basketball, that's for sure.
Yeah, then that's good to see locally. I mean, that's just down the road, so, you know, that's good to see. Great coverage for us, that's for sure.
Yes, and we'll be looking more at those teams as we look ahead and looking about basketball, that's for sure. Hey, give us a call, especially on tomorrow. I won't be here tomorrow. Our good friend Jeremy Sampson will be here tomorrow to talk sports with you. I'll be back on Monday. So tune in tomorrow to check out Jeremy Sampson to talk sports with him, and then I'll be back on Monday to talk sports with you. So make sure you check out Jeremy tomorrow. Jeremy always does a great job, so he'll be in for me tomorrow right here on AM 870 WKAR. And then I'll be back on Monday and look forward to talking to you then. So just make sure you stay tuned to WKAR. Aaron does a great job producing the show, and he'll be with our man Jeremy tomorrow. So be with him tomorrow, and also Jeremy Sampson right here on AM 870 WKAR. You've been listening to us, AMA 70, WKAR East Lansing. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 1:05 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. If you've never called us before, we invite you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons. Call us up talk sports with us right here on AM 870. So we want you to have yourself a very safe and pleasant evening, and I'll look forward to talking with you on Monday afternoon. But join Jeremy tomorrow right here on AM 870 WKAR East Lansing. Have a very safe and pleasant evening.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.